What is sacrifice? What does it mean to make a real difference? Throughout my life and career, I have straddled two worlds. Increasingly, I've become respected. Increasingly, my books and articles are published and read. Increasingly, I have been embraced by policymakers and referenced by bureaucrats. But today, I realized that I have misguided myself.
Let's get together. I'll say it first. We all love fun, and it's time for KilmerCast. Yeah, it's time for KilmerCast.
Welcome to KilmerCast. Here is your host, Francis Rizzo III.
Thanks, Bernard. Welcome to all the Val Pals out there listening to a new episode of KilmerCast. I'm your host, Francis Rizzo III, and I'm here to talk about the films of Val Kilmer, one of the most truly mesmeric American film actors of the modern era. On this episode, we'll be talking about Kilmer's role as an environmental evangelist in the 2009 The Thaw. Joining us to chat about the film and Kilmer's role in it is a film and pop culture writer whose work you've read everywhere from the New York Times to Forbes and the host of the excellent music podcast Side Jams. It's Brian Reisman. How's life treating you today, Brian?
Life is good.
That's great. Always good to have a good life.
When I was interviewed for Forbes, but I should plug that I've also written for Playboy and a bunch of other places like MSN and everything.
Yeah, I didn't want to include the whole list because it would have took half the episode. You are a quite prolific writer. And today you join the hallowed halls of KilmerCast. So, you know, it seems like we are possibly on the verge of some sort of, you know, adapted normal coming. It's like, it's kind of like we're going to get back to normal, but not maybe fully. You never quite know exactly what's going to come around the corner nowadays, but are you planning on heading back to the movies when we are allowed to on a regular basis?
I don't know. You know, I've been thinking about that. You know, I got my first vax shot, so I got the next one in 2.5 weeks. Mm. You know, we'll see what happens. I think people are, it's funny, we're not a culture of moderation. So everyone's like, yay, it's over. It's like, no, it's not over. I mean, we've got India to worry about because India's got a huge surge and people are coming to Canada from India and then they'll come to the States. And you know, you watch, I was watching the movie The Thaw again. I'm like, wow, you know, are they going to remake this for the COVID era? I hope not. Because I think it actually is very prescient. It makes a very good statement. I don't know. I've gotten so used to my 40-inch 4K TV and stereo sound. And I don't have to rush out. I mean, there are some movies you miss that experience. Mm-hmm. And then part of it, too, is I love to watch movies like this at like 2 o'clock in the morning because I go to bed late. You know, dead quiet. It almost works better. Like that. I don't know if you noticed that when you watched, but I don't know. Are you thinking of going back?
You know, I trust the movie theaters. Myself, I'm fully vaxxed at this point, but we're both in New York. I think next week they're going to increase capacity at theaters. I trust that the theaters are going to do the right thing. I don't trust the people in the theaters are going to do the right thing. That's the problem.
I've decided that, you know, I sit there and look at Dr. Crouppen, Val Kilmer's character in this movie, and I'm like, huh, I wonder what he would think of all this. Cause you know, it's like, the joke I make is I love my friends, my family, my girlfriend, and all these other people. I make new friends all the time and everyone else just help. Stay away from me. I can be a very social person. I'm as a writer, I can hermit. Mm. So for the first few months of the pandemic, I did okay, better than a lot of people that I know, because I was like, all right, I'm used to doing this. And then after a while it was like, this is getting weird.
Yeah, I always thought I'd be, you know, like the guy in Twilight Zone when, you know, all the time in the world read. And, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I have all the time in the world to watch movies and do whatever, read books. And I kind of want to do something else now.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling because it's like, you know, in the one sense, I like to go out in the world. In another sense, like you just trust people less and less because it's amazing how arrogant a lot of people have become.
Oh, absolutely.
And this film, particularly, I look at it and I think, yeah, it's, you know, I mean, this is clearly kind of a redo of The Thing, but kind of expanding the scope of it a bit more at the beginning and the end of the film. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping they save the Cinerama Dome because that's a theater worth going to. I'm bummed that the Ziegfeld in New York City is gone. The last movie I saw there was the last movie that played there, Force Awakens. So that was great to see that opening night with that crowd. I don't usually do that, but for that movie I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard because, you know, then I like art house theaters that have all the culty weird movies that we like.
Oh yeah,
you know, and they're usually not great theaters. Unfortunately, irony is that they're small, and it's like some theaters I go into some of these multiplexes. I'm like, I might as well just be at home.
Yeah, exactly. The screen's almost crazy. As big.
And so, but we'll see. I'm going to take it slow and steady. I kind of want to just go outside and see people at first, you know, eating outside. We've done a little bit of eating inside. I've been trying not to post photos because I have friends, you know, I live in Long Island, my girlfriend's in Brooklyn, but Manhattan is worse. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends who've been quarantined and I see people going on vacation. I'm like, seriously?
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't, don't push. I mean, and not just because I think it's, I don't think you need to do it right now, but the other problem is, the bigger problem is I feel bad for people who are quarantined, who haven't seen their family. Mm-hmm. Should be a little more sensitive to them.
Yeah.
You don't want to throw it in their face.
No, not at all.
I don't get depressed, you know, because of that. So.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I've been going out since the pandemic started because I work. And so I've been constant, you know, and I know some people just don't leave the house and I feel terrible for it, you know, because I mean, I don't have a choice, but you know, if I did have the choice, I still probably wouldn't have stayed inside to be safe and go, you know, to the store and pick some stuff up. But I know people who just can't do that and it's terrible.
Well, and on the essential workers, it's harder. I mean, I remember first going into Target when this was going on and feeling bad. It's like, you know, because everyone's just, I don't know. It's just interesting to see people's behavior. I think a majority of people want to do the right thing, but you have a strong minority that are sort of just, I don't know. It kind of drives me nuts, and I feel bad for anybody who's. My heart goes out to everybody because it's. I mean, I know someone who works retail in North Carolina, you know, and it's like people come in, they want to have a conversation. It's like not today. It's just not.
Yeah,
you
no.
Can't really do that right now, and it's weird, but yeah. I mean, the thing I've realized, I don't think I want to see a bunch of COVID movies either.
No, not at all.
We've learned pandemic movies aren't real life pandemics aren't really exciting.
No, they're not fun either.
Or zombie movies, which is horrifying to begin with.
Yeah.
But it's actually slow. And for the people who are suffering, that's horrifying. But everyone else, it's like, at least with this movie, as I'm showing us, The Thaw, like you can see the parasite. Mm-hmm. The problem a lot of the populace has, they can't see anything.
No.
So it doesn't feel real.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Be interesting to see. I hope we don't see a bunch of pandemic movies actually coming.
Yeah, I mean, you have to believe. I mean, there were a few during the pandemic that they released. I don't think anybody really cared to watch them. that heist movie, and there was that relationship movie, Malcolm, and I can't remember the name of the other name.
A friend of mine just posted something on Facebook, and it was a movie about like COVID-23 and what happens in 4 years from now. And she's like, seriously? You hear me? Somebody made a movie. You know, the one thing I will say, and I did, it was a thought I had when this all started, is you're looking at pictures of San Francisco and New York and LA. I mean, I drove through Times Square at one point when we got our first COVID test just to see. We weren't worried. We did it anyway. Mm-hmm. And it was no traffic on a Friday night in Times Square, Lincoln Center area. And I'm like, if somebody wants to do an apocalyptic, and of course, now we're going to get the Will Smith sequel. I mean, it was originally
I Am Legend.
I Am Legend, which I should remember because I have actually a book here, you know, because I remember Omega Man and Last Man on Earth before that, which were everything better. But we're going to I Am Legend 2. So, you know, somebody went out and shot as much footage as they could, got drone footage. So you could effectively do a realistic looking pandemic, post-apocalyptic whatever, because it would be nobody on the street.
Oh yeah.
And it would be so much easier than digitally erasing everything. But I'm like, yeah, I just don't know if I'd want to be the person trying to put that together right now, because I would feel a tremendous amount of guilt.
Yeah, no, read the room. It's not really what we're looking for right now. Yeah, but speaking of the stuff we are watching and enjoying, what's keeping you entertained right now?
God, it's funny. The last year I spent a lot of time doing Blu-ray commentaries for Kino Lorber and for Arrow Video. So I've been watching a lot of old movies. About the newest movie in that whole collection I watched was The Hot Spot with Don Johnson.
That's a good one.
And I did this sort of B-movie one, Bloodstone, from the late 80s, and Nico Mastorakis production. It was the same director as Under Siege, actually. Yeah, it was interesting to do a lot of that stuff. Gotcha was another one.
That was a great one.
Yeah, that was fun. And it's
personal favorite of mine.
Anthony Edwards, Linda Fiorentino, when they were very young. Now I'm trying to remember all the ones that I did because it got really eclectic. I did Benny Hill's first feature from the mid-50s.
Wow.
Yeah, Whodunit. So it's been interesting. And I've just gotten back into, I finished the first season of Mandalorian. I watched WandaVision. I'm watching Disenchantment, which I love. And it's been late. You know, I've been getting into, you know, I watched Sound of Metal and Nomadland. I was bummed because I showed my girlfriend Insidious the other night. And she likes to watch scary movies only with me. she couldn't stand it. She thought it was the worst thing she'd ever seen. I'm like,
Oh wow.
She wasn't scared, and I love that movie. It was the third time I'd seen it.
So that's a really good horror film.
But I showed her The Conjuring, and that freaked her out. So it's interesting how one James Wan worked for her and the other one didn't.
Hmm.
And we watched Don't Listen, the Spanish film, which really is kind of spinning off The Conjuring, if you think about it. And that freaked her out. And it's always the thing. She's like, you're not going home, right? Oh, I got to go now. I'll see you later. The cat will take care of you. She's like, yeah.
So, yeah, no. Can't do that to me.
What else? What have you been watching lately? What have I been missing? Because I feel like I'm so behind.
Yeah, recently I watched Close Enough, the HBO Max series. It's an animated series by J.J. Quinzel. Very funny stuff. Yeah. I watched that Q documentary on HBO Max, the Down the Rabbit Hole one on QAnon. Kind of disappointing ending, I have to say, but I think anything involving that group would be disappointing in the end, considering we're stuck with it as a reality.
Yeah.
And today I watched Kong versus Godzilla, and I just didn't dig it.
You know, I love Godzilla, and I've seen all of them. That's the one I haven't seen yet. I'm just going to wait. I feel like, I don't know. I mean, I got that whole Criterion box set, which I still have to really dig deeper into. I mean, one of my friends, his son is in the early 20s. He's a big Godzilla fan, which is cool. A lot younger than me. But yeah, I feel like they've become video games. I think Gareth Edwards did a great job, and some people were annoyed with his reboot because they pushed off a lot of the battles. I'm like, but that's what old school movies used to do. They didn't show everything all the way through. They made you wait for it. Now, sometimes it got annoying, like those Universal monster movies where, like, you know, the Wolfman and Frankenstein fight in the last 5 minutes of a 75-minute movie, and you're waiting just for that. But there, I don't know. Is it as video gamey as, like, it was Kong Skull Island? And was the monsters?
It's definitely in that, like, boss level kind of, you know, like, here we get this fight, then we get that fight. The first 30 minutes are dreadfully dull, and you know, because I guess they just have to build up to the fight, and then, you know, then it's several more fights after that. It's just like, and it's funny because then Friday Mortal Kombat comes out, so I'm like, oh, back-to-back films like that. It'll just be fight after fight after fight.
I remember when Mortal Kombat came out over 20 years ago. It's almost 25 years ago almost now. But the weird thing about Kong versus Godzilla, the original Godzilla versus King Kong was like, it's a terrible movie. And people say, oh, the original is better. I'm like, no, it was terrible. It was awful. War of the Gargantuas, now that was fun. But I feel, and I wanted to get a Russ Tamblyn interview recently. I thought they were reissuing the original Haunting. It turns out they were reissuing the reboot.
Yeah, the Paramount one, yeah.
And I was too bad because I really wanted to talk to him. Because I'd interviewed Amber like 15 years ago when she did Grudge 2. And I loved, and she told me a creepy story about The Haunting too, about what happened to her dad on the set of that. And then on top of that, yeah, the original Haunting, I would have loved to talk to him about that. And War of the Gargantuas, because that's just such a crazy movie, which itself is a sequel to what's a Frankenstein Conquers the World. Which, I don't know. You know, I love cult movies and monster movies.
Absolutely.
The digital game doesn't really make it better for me. I always cite as the best example of digital with rubber suits is the third Gamera movie from the 90s.
I don't know that one.
But it just had, you could tell it was rubber suits, but they enhanced it. And it looked cool. Like, this is the way to do it. Like, have a realistic person, or a practical person in a suit, but then enhance that so it looks more real.
Yeah, grounded a bit.
There's character to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But I'm glad it's still going. I mean, Shin Godzilla was kind of frustrating because it was interesting. It was a funny satire on Japanese bureaucracy and how it was taking them forever to make a decision about what to do about it. Meanwhile, he's destroying everything.
Yeah.
But after a while, I'm like, oh my God, guys, do something.
Yeah.
You're killing me.
We need something here.
What else have you watched other than those two?
You know, I've mostly been watching Val Kilmer films because of the show.
I was going to watch Top Secret again, but I so vividly remembered. And I still love the introduction of the French Resistance, especially Chocolate Mousse.
Yes. Latrine.
You know, and I only saw part of The Saint, you know, when it came out. How did you feel he did with The Saint?
I thought it's solid. I mean, it's not what people wanted out of it, because it's not what people want out of The Saint. You know, they want James Bond, and it's not James Bond. You know, but I think it's a solid action film, and I think he plays the part well. I think it's, you know, he brings exactly what you need, somebody that you think is very capable of what he needs to do. And he's always capable in his roles. He's somebody who has a real trouble projecting weakness. And I think that's very interesting about him.
Yeah, and even in this movie, I think he brings the right level of fatigue to his characters. The character's only in it for 20 minutes out of 90. But I don't know. We'll get to that later on with the reviews, because I saw some of them and I'm like, some interesting comments from people.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Top Secret and The Saint. What is your favorite Val Kilmer film?
It's funny. I haven't seen loads of Val Kilmer movies.
Most people haven't.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because it's sort of like I'm one of those guys that samples things. I actually, you know what I think probably from all my recollections beyond Top Secret, I love Kill Me Again.
Oh, wow. That's not one most people bring up.
Yeah, that one. I remember I liked John Dahl's work. I liked Red Rock West. I liked Last Seduction. I mean, Last Seduction is the best.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Out of all the ones he did. But I remember I kind of liked that style of filmmaking. Maybe that's not you know, or something like Batman Forever was a little odd. He was a little too debonair, I think.
Maybe he was a good Bruce Wayne, in my opinion, and less of a good Batman.
Yes. Well, that's a tricky thing. And yeah. I mean, the Batman series had lots of problems to begin with.
True.
You know, I mean, after the first couple of them. I mean, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang was a fun movie. It's been a while since I thought. I just remember it being really twisted. But a lot of the recent ones I really haven't checked out. I didn't have so much time. I mean, lately, this is the thing with me is I'm trying to, as in with these commentaries, I kept up with so much stuff. Even when you contacted me about this, I watched the movie weeks later. Now it's been a couple months later. And I was like, oh, yeah, I better revisit this again.
Yeah, you kind of, sometimes it just goes out of your head.
I mean, you know, he's done interesting movies like Heat. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Willow's ridiculous. And, you know, I remember seeing that in the theater. And I was like, my friends were like, this is awesome. And I was in film school and I went through my pretentious art film phase. And I do still love pretentious art movies, but I just watched that movie like, really?
It's divisive for sure.
It is. And so I don't know. I mean, do you have a lot of people on that are huge Val Kilmer fans?
It's a mix. You know, I've had people who hate Val Kilmer and I like that perspective. It's a totally different kind of.
Oh, that's what. Now, which episode was the hate Val Kilmer?
For his most recent film, Pay Dirt. Yeah. Somebody just.
That's probably. And it was, I bet it wasn't, was it not a great movie?
It was not a great movie. No. Most of his recent films are questionable at best.
I'm surprised he actually, you know, given Top Secret, he didn't do more comedy.
That's definitely a theme that we've discussed in the show as we've gone along in these episodes, is that I think when Top Gun set him on a course for superstardom as a lead man, he left behind his comedy chops. And it's really disappointing because he had some really...
He did.
Really, really solid comedy roles. I mean, and then you look, later on, he did MacGruber. And you're like, well, it's still there. I mean, it was right there, but he just didn't do it. I view him a lot like Ryan Reynolds. He's like the proto Ryan Reynolds, because Ryan Reynolds started out comedy and then went into action. And people are like, I don't know if I like him as much as an action guy as I like him as a charming guy. Ryan Reynolds kind of pulled it out in Deadpool. He combined the two sides of it.
Yes.
I don't think Val Kilmer was successful doing that.
Well, Ryan Reynolds also, that whole thing with Hugh Jackman, you know, the rivalry. I mean, that's a great... That great spot where they do ads for each other to make up. And of course, Ryan Reynolds does this awesome wine ad for Hugh Jackman. And Hugh Jackman disses his gin, like just spills it all over the table. And he's like, oh, I thought the feud wasn't off. Like, I thought this was just, you know. But Deadpool, I think, is the thing that made Ryan Reynolds' career. But I interviewed him once years ago, 10, 11 years ago for, I think it was Contraband. I think that was a movie with Mark Wahlberg. I think that was the one that he was in. But, you know, yeah, I didn't really, the straight action movies, I didn't go for it, but Deadpool has this charm.
Yeah.
And it's so messed up and he gets it. And it, you sense it is his sense of humor. Mm-hmm. I think he really fought for that too. I don't think he
was. Oh, yeah.
Because the first time he was Deadpool was very serious. Mm-hmm. The first Wolverine movie.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I liked the first Wolverine movie less the second time I saw it. And I liked the other ones more. It's weird. Like, there's certain X-Men movies I flipped on. Mm-hmm. X-Men 3 I liked. It's weird. It's kind of like, it's funny when you watch something years later too, and like the Thaw, when I watched it again, I was like, oh, that's actually pretty good. It's not original, but I'm a big cult movie buff. So like, speaking of Top Gun, like, I love Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. You know, I love Miracle Mile. That's one of my favorite movies.
That's a great movie.
It's fantastic. And it's one of those films that didn't get as to actually a lot of Anthony Edwards you would have thought was going to be a big star, going to a big star after Top Gun, and it didn't really happen. And it wasn't until ER mm-hmm. That he did do that. And but he did all these cool movies in the 80s, like Mr. North.
Oh yeah.
He did this kind of quirky Richard Benjamin comedy co-starring Forrest Whitaker called Downtown, kind of like this buddy cop movie. It's ridiculous, but they kind of pull it off. He just did littler films that I thought were really cool. Mm-hmm. And he had a show that briefly lasted. They screened Miracle Mile here in New York 3 or 4 years ago, and I met him and Mara Winningham, and she's been on Broadway. And I think they actually became a couple.
Oh, did they?
It was interesting because they were a couple in the movie, but not in real life. And then many, many, many years later, they become a couple.
It's odd how that works.
Someone told me that. So, yeah, no, I mean, you can. I'm sure you've dug deeper in this podcast with some of, because a lot of Kilmer stuff lately isn't as high profile.
Oh, definitely. You know, and unfortunately, like you mentioned before about this film, oftentimes he's on the cover or he's the lead name, and then he's only in the film for a short period of time. So I've watched some films where I barely have been able to talk about Kilmer in it, but I'm happy when he's there.
Well, he's got a presence. I mean, even in the Thaw, he's actually in good shape. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he's dealt with cancer, which I know he denied for a while, and that definitely slowed things down.
Oh yeah,
I don't know that how that's good, because I think he's in Top Gun Maverick, isn't he? Isn't he supposed?
He is apparently in it, but I don't know how he's in it. That's the question.
I'll bet you his character. I'm sure he's Iceman, he's going to have like, he's probably going to have health problems or something.
Because oh, absolutely.
Cancer. And that if that works, that's great. They keep pushing off that movie because, you know, Tom Cruise is not going to have his movie released virtually.
No.
Visually, that will not happen.
Definitely not. I was hoping I would get to watch it early, but, you know, no, not going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's, you know what? I'm good with it. I haven't even seen Wonder Woman yet. I don't mind the slowdown. My best friend, Steven, he said to me once, even if they stopped making movies, you could never catch up with all the movies that have ever been made.
Oh, yeah, no way.
And even if there's stuff that you want to see, even now, this is the thing. I go into Prime, you know, between Netflix, Prime, I have Hulu bundle with Spotify, sort of trade services with another friend. Mm-hmm. And then I have Acorn. I have BritBox.
Wow.
I have, you know, and because of media stuff, I have like Paramount Plus, and I want to get Arrow and Shudder. So I'm kind of screwed.
Yeah.
And Prime kills me because Prime just dumps all the, and they're tricky now. What they do is they put it up for 2 or 3 weeks. And then by the time you're getting around to it,
yep,
they're going to have to charge a rental fee.
Oh yeah. My watch list is loaded with dollar signs.
Yeah. I mean, it's like all the Amicus stuff, some of the Hammer stuff. There's some great, like obscure horror movies, which is wonderful. Sci-fi films. I pulled out stuff. We go through on the weekend, like, oh, we could watch this. And then, of course, I go through and watch a lot of the weird stuff by myself. And,
yeah.
It's cool. Like, it's great. But it makes you realize that as you get older, like, yeah, you know, I'm going to have to start paring it down. Because when you're like in your 20s, you're like, yeah, I'll just sit through this. And now my friend Stephanie, who I watch horror movies with, they call her Slasher Steph because she's actually very sweet. But I just assume she's a serial killer underneath. She must be. She's too nice now. It's because she loves horror movies. And we watched like, you know, the New York Ripper, the Fulci movie, which is strange. And I have the 15-minute rule now, and she started doing it too a little bit. I think she was realizing that you don't need to sit through the whole thing.
No.
after 15-20 minutes, and I know, you know, people say we have to give things time. It's like TV shows. Some shows don't kick in for 3 or 4 episodes. And my problem is that's great, but there is so much to watch now that they have to give you something. Even if it's slow, you got to get something right at the beginning to grab you and pull you in. And it's a shame because I hate having that attitude, but there's too much now.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of wondering, though, because the thing I was thinking about in terms of Val Kilmer and in terms of Netflix and in terms of Prime, you have a lot of actors that have been coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Whose careers, some, like, they were kind of petering out, and then all of a sudden it's like, boom.
Yeah.
Back. I mean, I think this, Nicolas Cage has been busy.
Oh, yeah.
However, I think The History of Swear Words is probably the most high profile thing he's done in a while.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that.
And I think I got a lot of people, hopefully got him interested. I mean, he's done those crazy Lovecraft adaptations.
Yeah.
But I don't, he's been like Steven Seagal in a way, better, but like, you know, just doing these movies that I don't think are getting as much attention. And he's due for a comeback.
Oh, yeah.
His Cage is on that. But I like him doing these crazy movies because he did Vampire's Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
He did stuff back in the 80s that was off the wall. And it was, I love Vampire's Kiss. That movie is batshit crazy, pardon my French. It's awesome. And, but you know, a lot of people will not. It's funny, actually. So I interned at Miramax. I was a paid intern and script reader this summer.
Wow, I was at Miramax also.
When?
It was in 98, 99.
Oh, 10 years after me then. You're in the Tribeca office.
Yes. With Scott, yeah.
And his first wife came in to the original office in 48th Street when they had it on the 16th and the 23rd and 24th floors. They had it separated out. I think it was it. And I was upstairs most of the time. But I think it was his first wife, Eve Chilton, came in, and she had worked on Vampire's Kiss, whatever production company she'd been at. And I was telling her how I love this movie, and she just looked at me like I was crazy. It's like, really? Like, no, really? It's a good movie.
It's a great movie.
But a lot of people don't. I think you have to get New York to get that movie. And again, this is another thing that we're going to deal with as dudes is like, there are some movies you just watch, and some women, I understand why they're not going to get it.
Oh, yeah.
I was showing my ex-girlfriend Life Force. Toby Hooper space vampire movie.
Yep.
I love that movie, but it's a boy movie.
Oh yeah, like, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
naked vampire lady. I can see why. And this gets into the discussion of political correctness. And there are certain movies I will not recommend to my second cousin. Mm-hmm. His moms will kill me for that. Sword and the Sorcerer, 15-year-old Brian thinks, you know, the triple bladed sword, the boobs, the blood, the gratuitousness is awesome.
Oh yeah.
Much older Brian is like, yeah, I can't show that to my girlfriend and certain other people. They'll just be like, no, this is wrong. I'm like, yes, but you know, I can watch it.
Yeah. There's nothing better for a marriage than the fact that most of these services have different profiles on them.
Oh yeah. Well, my girlfriend, you know, when we're thinking of looking for a house, and I hope we do need a house because we do watch different stuff. So we converge on some stuff. She's willing to go that weird route, but I can only show certain things. She probably won't watch Conan with me. And that's another very politically incorrect movie.
Oh yeah.
Which actually has one of the most badass action heroines of the 80s, you know, Valeria, who no one ever talks about.
No.
And we're getting off the whole Val Kilmer thing, but that's a great role, Sandahl Bergman. And I thought she would have gotten more roles out of that. And that's
maybe Red Sonja kind of overshadowed it in the end.
That was not a
not a yeah, Brigitte. We should talk a bit about this movie that we're talking about today. But before we do, let's dive back in time.
Gather round as we put Kilmer in context.
So The Thaw was released on DVD in America on October 6, 2009, which is incredibly like 12 years ago now at this point.
A bit and a half, yep.
Yep. The International Olympic Committee voted to award Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, the rights to the 2006 Summer Olympics at that time. Kanye West and Lady Gaga announced that their co-headlining tour, Fame Kills, was canceled. So that never happened. I can't imagine what that would have been like to see those two on tour together. That would have been quite a scene.
Oh, God. It might have been worse now, actually, with the way he's behaved.
Now it'd be even better.
The big ego then, and now he's just out of his mind now. But yeah.
Yep. It was revealed that the Balloon Boy story, in which a Colorado child was supposedly carried away in a weather balloon, it was just a marketing hoax. So all the people that cared about it, you know, it just turned out to be nothing. And nobody remembers that one.
I vaguely remember that story, though, now that you're breaking up. Yeah. Because I like weird things like that.
Hundreds of thousands marched in Washington, D.C. for the National Equity March to help push to end discrimination against LGBT people, and hasn't quite worked out yet, but we moved forward a bit, thankfully.
And we're told today we're talking about a verdict that just came in the Derek Chauvin case. So the right verdict.
Yes, absolutely. Good times.
Yeah, well, sort of. Yeah, but I mean, no, after last year, oh my God.
Yeah.
What you're talking about now, go on. This is interesting to see what was going on then.
Yeah, well, that's the big news that was happening at the time. You know, it's funny. Pretty much every time I do this, it's bummer news. This was at least some decent news in this one. Most of the time, it's just horrible things happened.
Well, also, actually, 2009 was when Obama started office.
So in January. So it was a positive time for sure. So I guess the news got a little better for us then. Topping the Billboard chart this week, a frequent Kilmer cast appearance from this group, and that is the Black Eyed Peas, who had their party anthem, I Got a Feeling. They were all over the charts in 2009, and there were several Val Kilmer films at the time, so we keep hearing them on the show, even though I don't get it. I don't get it.
Well, I actually went backstage at a Black Eyed Peas show.
Yeah?
I read for a couple of trade publications, but I was covering their lighting and sound. So I actually, I met Taboo briefly backstage, you know, martial arts dude. And he seemed pretty nice. And I was walking by, and Will.i.am was actually, he had a rig set up. He would record stuff and backstage on tour. So I got to see him with this big digital rig, and he was just jamming and doing his thing. Watched the Pussycat Dolls perform from the side of the stage.
Quite a scene.
And we saw the different mics, and we could figure out which was the live mic, which had been Nicole's mic. We weren't sure if the other mics were live.
That's funny.
That was 15 years ago at this point. But like, it was one that was clearly hers because it was also had this diamond thing on it. And we're joking, that's the live one, right? That happens a lot. I mean, I have no idea. She's still around basically, right?
Yeah. Yep. She's got the Masked Singer.
Yeah. So that was kind of an interesting experience. And that was around the time when she was shot the show. We worked together on some things back then. And after three songs, man, they kicked the photographers out. They were just brutal about it. Like when I was growing up, when I was a kid in the 80s, you could shoot the whole show. I look in Circus and Hit Parade. People were sweating. You know, they don't like to show that anymore.
No, not at all.
Never let them see you sweat. Well, that was like an ad tagline. Well, now it's really true. Yeah. And that was, but rock fans, we like that. We wanted to see them working hard. And now it's like with these bands, like three songs, they literally just show people. I was like, wow.
Yeah. I mean, three songs is pretty good for a lot of these acts. I've heard like 90 seconds.
Or maybe for the newer ones. Yeah. No one's been shooting anything lately, but yeah, it's disappointing, but. Anyway, that's the Black Eyed Peas. So it was still sort of fun to walk around and just see what the routine is like. It's not as glamorous, I think, as people think it is.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Big catering, though.
At number two, another act that's been often on this show for some reason is Jay Sean with the song Down. Definitely not a song that I listened to when it was on the radio. Just nothing about this song appeals to me. I mean, does this song do anything for you?
Nah, you know, I'm a metal goth dark ambient, kind of do a lot of like movie soundtracks. I'm actually very eclectic. But for some reason, hip hop country doesn't really always do it for me. R&B, some of it can. I guess I don't listen to it that much, but there's like, I like Janelle Monáe because I like her style.
And yeah,
like,
she's good.
She knows what she wants and she doesn't kowtow to anybody. And she's into sci-fi too, so that's like an added bonus.
Well, then third one, as you mentioned, you didn't like country and you're not a big pop person, so you're really definitely not going to like this one. This is the song that kicked off Miley Cyrus's second act, Party in the USA. I'm not really doing it for you, right?
Now she's becoming more rock and roll. It's funny.
Yeah.
I'm a rocker.
Yeah, I think she's talented. I think she's just very marketing, you know, focused. And
sounds a lot auto-tuned, to be honest. This is the problem I have with modern music now. So much of it sounds digital, and even if it doesn't sound auto-tuned or pitch corrected, whatever, you still feel like things are manipulated. It's just the way it's recorded now. Even rock bands, it's all digital sounding drums.
Mm. Yeah, you don't get a lot of that natural, you know, only the Foo Fighters really are the band I know that actually do things live and do it in interesting ways to record. Like they recorded the most recent album in a house down the staircase. They put a drum set at the top of the staircase and recorded it from the bottom.
And they did a previous album one, I think was like 1-inch tape. It was like, it was an odd tape. It wasn't done digitally, which is cool.
Yeah, it's very cool when people actually perform.
The analog.
Jumping over to TV, the top 10 had a very traditional look. Led by Monday and Sunday Night Football, top of those charts. Beyond that, very much a bit mixed bag. There was representation from all four networks, which is kind of rare. Usually it feels like there's eras where one network dominates. In this case, CBS had placed three shows with Big Bang Theory, Two and a Half Men, and NCIS, while Fox had House and Family Guy. Again, I liked House. I remember watching House when it first came on, but I lost interest. I've lost a lot of interest in hour-long dramas. I just, maybe it's a patience thing. Maybe I just lost my attention span, but
what about
I just
streaming? Can't
watch them. Streaming, I watch mostly sitcoms. I'm very much somebody who wants if you could do a 30-minute drama, which I think they should be able to do, I would watch a 30-minute drama any day of the week.
Well, you remember when they had the Avengers on BBC back in the 60s? There was a show called The Protectors, which I think had Robert Vaughn in it. Mm-hmm. And it had Nyree Dawn Porter, who was offered Emma Peel before Diana Rigg.
Mm.
And that was 30-minute version of The Avengers. Yeah. It was basically faster paced. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. It doesn't give you a lot of time for character development.
Yeah, I don't even need it fast paced. I just want it done in 30 minutes. And then I'll pick it up the next episode. Especially with serialization, I can carry a storyline. I don't need hour-long chapters for everything.
Well, I mean, that's what I kind of liked about the early WandaVision episodes. Then they got longer, which is actually fine. Mm-hmm. Like 30, 35 minutes because they were replicating the sitcom mold.
Yes.
First few episodes, which was clever and I liked it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Haunting of Hill House, I liked a lot. I didn't think I was going to like that at all. But then the episodes get vary radically from like 37 to 70 minutes.
That's a lot. over on ABC, they had a pair of soapy shows in the number one scripted show, Grey's Anatomy and Desperate Housewives. While NBC had only one show on the air besides on the top 10 besides Sunday Night Football, and that was The Office, as I mentioned before, Jim and Pam getting married, which really helped push it up to number 5. Yeah, I definitely think of The Office more of as a syndicated show and syndicated success and more of a streaming success. But I guess people really did watch it when it was on the air, even though I don't know if it had the conversation around it back then when it was on the air originally.
And my girlfriend has watched a lot of reruns, so I end up seeing a lot of this stuff. She loves true crime, The Office. And then we delve into some other series on Netflix. So sometimes I'm like, a Bar Rescue. We ended up watching Bar Rescue, which is a ridiculous show. It's sort of, I hate reality TV, but the guy's so ridiculous. I'm like, who would put up with this abuse? But you know, it's all scripted, you know?
Of course.
I mean, like it's not an actual script, but they say, do this. You know, and you look at some of these people like, wow, these bars are horrifying. I think it is interesting to see how horrifying they are. But I watched, and the list of all the things you were talking about, well, first of all, mentioning The Office, I mean, there are certain shows that gain momentum, and it seems like that's one of them that just keeps getting shown. Mm-hmm. Probably because our lives, people who work in offices, has gotten worse. I've been working at home for 25 years, so I've avoided all that, but I hear all the stories. I'm like, wow, I'm so glad I don't work in an office anymore, because the things that you hear, it's much more competitive now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and brutal. I mean, I'm wondering after they're going to, I don't know that it's great to actually close all these offices because I don't think everyone's suited to work at home.
Mm.
I can do it, but I know a lot of people in my life who can't, they wouldn't like it. So they're going to try to save money, and then they do that with jobs. Well, you know, we'll just lay this person off. And then so two other people will pick up their duties. It's like, no.
Survival of the fittest, I guess they consider.
Freelance writing is getting harder, man. I tell you.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's a hard to find a gig for freelance writing, especially one that's consistent.
Yeah. I managed to get away with it, but it gets trickier. You're always pitching, basically.
Yes.
So. But yeah, the only show of those that I watched in that whole top 10 was Desperate Housewives. And I think by that point, I'd even given up. I think I got through about 4 seasons. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, that show kind of petered out for sure. Lost a lot of steam.
But Dana Delaney.
Can't argue that.
One of my few celebrity crushes. That's it.
Well, outside of a festival screening at the Toronto International Film Festival, The Thaw was direct-to-video, so it's not showing up in the top 10 at the box office. Instead, I guess you could argue it's somewhat similar because it involves, you know, a lot of death, but is Zombieland, which earned $32 million out of the gate, a really solid comedy horror film. And it was followed by the third week of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and the 3D re-release of Toy Story. So I guess all the parents are going to watch Zombieland and then tossing their kids over to some animated films.
I actually went to the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs junket.
Yeah.
Which they did in Dylan's candy bar.
Oh, yeah. Makes sense.
Candy. That was part of the whole way of, you know, schmoozing with people, I guess. So, yes. Come to ask some questions, get some free candy.
Nice.
Be nice to our movie. Zombieland, though, Zombieland predicted the temporary downfall of Twinkies.
True. Yeah, it's funny looking at this. I said Toy Story. I was like, I was like, why is Toy Story back in the top 10? Now I realized it was the 3D re-release. We had a lot of those 3D re-releases. And I was looking at it, I was just, you know, curious because it's been a while since I watched Toy Story. I was like, you know, I couldn't remember who actually was behind it. And then did you know that Joss Whedon was the lead writer on that film?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, I don't remember ever being talked about. And it's like now it's obviously a problem considering what's going on with Joss Whedon. But like, wow, I never realized he was a Pixar guy at the beginning and worked on that film.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that have come up now. I've had discussions with people about what you do about certain things. Like, do you listen to Michael Jackson from the era before you found out there was questionable activity going on? So always be nice about it. And, you know, and I just, yeah. It's strange. But then again, like, you know, when we worked at Miramax, like, I'm not going to stop watching Miramax movie because Harvey's a major dick.
Yeah.
You know, he was a bully back then. When I met him in the office, he actually, the first day I met him, he yelled at me. So that was my baptism at Miramax. It's like they had me go into Bob's office to build a fan. And so I built this fence in like an hour. Harvey comes in, the AC's not working, just got back from con. He's on the phone, but he was a big guy, and he's leaned over and the phone is sort of next to us. I think he's just sitting there contemplating something. He's not talking, he's listening to somebody, and I can't hear anybody on the phone. And so he freaks out and he's like, "What are you doing in the office? I'm the chairman of the company." And part of me is terrified and part of me is like, "Where the hell do you want this, man? I spent an hour building this fan for you." And like everybody behind me got dead silent because they were afraid of him. And I had really long hair, so he used to call me the guy with the hair. And I asked one of his two, you know, personal assistants, I said, "So is that a bad thing?" She's like, "Oh no, he'd love to have hair as long as yours, but he can't." It's like, okay. It was an interesting time working there before that was around the summer scandal of Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
That was a big time.
Sex, Lies, and Videotape premiere, which is interesting. So you were there late 90s.
Yeah, I was at Shakespeare in Love time.
What?
I was at the Shakespeare in Love time.
And how was that?
Interesting. I worked on some PR stuff for Dogma when all that happened. So I did a lot of research about what happened with like Universal with Last Temptation of Christ and put together some ideas on what we had to do with that, which is an odd thing for an intern to do, but it was a wild time there. There was a lot going on in that building.
It's interesting. Miramax put out the movie Bully, I'm like, seriously?
I mean, on the nose.
And I was at the Sunset. Well, no, where was this? The Four Seasons, I think, in Beverly Hills. A friend of mine, my friend Ed Peters, used to do a lot of PR for Anchor Bay. We went there, we'd go for drinks, and we just want to see who was showing up. And the first time we go there, it's Harvey Weinstein, Cardinal Mahoney, and Jeffrey Rush, all within 20 feet of each other. And I almost said something to Harvey, but I didn't think he would remember me. And I was just like, whatever. He was actually fine with me after that. But now I'm glad I didn't say anything at all. Just like, it's just so weird, that whole thing.
Oh, absolutely.
It was a strange time. I have to write down all those stories because, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to forget that. Yeah. At number 4 on the chart was Surrogates with Bruce Willis, and that was followed by the debut of Ricky Gervais' The Invention of Lying, which was a pretty solid film. Mm-hmm. And then number 6, Michael Moore's documentary Capitalism, a Love Story. He really had a good run there for a while with his documentaries getting into the top 10. I don't think he could place it. I don't know if you could place a documentary period in the top 10 anymore.
Fahrenheit 11.9 did not.
No.
And actually, that's one I think a lot of his fans should have seen, because it actually blamed liberals as much as conservatives for the rise of Trump. I think that's what was interesting about it.
Yeah.
It was a little too honest for the left, and maybe everyone was burnt out, but anyway. So what was this in the top 10? What's rounding it out?
Then you have the first week of the Elliot Page roller derby film Whip It, which I thought was quite good. And then Fame, The Informant, and a romance that I have no memory of at all. The film is called Love Happens. Do you know Love Happens?
I remember the name. Who was in it?
So it's Jennifer Aniston and Aaron Eckhart.
I just remember the title.
Such a weird, like, I always am amazed when I do this top 10 and I'm like, what is that movie? I'm somebody who has worked in films and, you know, I love film and I watch film, and to have a film be in the top 10 in the country and have no memory at all amazes me. This one, it was about a widower whose book about coping with loss turns into a best-selling self-help guru, and then he falls for the hotel florist where his seminar is given, only to learn that he hasn't yet confronted his wife's passing.
Oh, you know, it's funny. I don't watch that many rom-coms. I did a story on them many years ago, so I went through, like, you know, Bridget Jones's Diary. And there's certain ones that are actually not bad. It's just sort of funny because I don't consider myself a typical guy, but then I watch typical guy stuff a lot of times. Like, I'm just, it's so weird because I'm like, I'm for gun control, and yet I watch all these crazy action movies where things are just getting blown up.
Yeah.
A few years ago, I watched Commando again. It's just a ridiculous movie. Schwarzenegger is ridiculous in it, but I don't know. There's something about it. I guess it's a vicarious thing.
Yeah, it's a little abortion. Guilty pleasure.
Hey, I mean, look, I like the Expendables movies. You know,
on the other end of the chart, in last place, was Box Elder, a college set comedy about four dudes who refuse to grow up. It earned a whopping $18 at the box office.
Those are always fun.
I just wanted to mention this because it was directed by a guy named Todd Sklar, and he also directed a film that just has a wonderful title, 92 Skybox Alonzo Mourning Rookie Card. I kind of want to watch it just for the title.
Oh, man. You know, there was one recently. I don't know. You always find that somebody famous has done a movie that's so bad that it makes $26. What was interesting last year at the beginning of the pandemic is it was a horror movie, and I'm blanking on the title now, that was like the number one movie in America for over a month because it was playing in drive-ins, and it was the only place
for
the movie. So it pulled in at least, I think, $1 million or something like that or more. For a low budget film, it's like, great. That's like, made it. You could say it was the number one movie in America for a month. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It's on the box. It's in the advertising. The number one movie.
That's all that matters.
Exactly.
Well, we're going to take a little break, and then we'll be right back to talk about The Thaw. The Thaw was written and directed by Mark A. Lewis, a Canadian filmmaker with a trio of feature films under his belt, the latest being the 2018 The Age of Adulting, which he edited out of a web series of the same name. I looked him up, and he has no social presence at all, so I have no idea if he's done anything since 2018. When was the last time he tweeted? I don't know if he's doing anything. I mean, he might just be done with making films, which would be interesting to have this film on your resume and then not make much else besides it.
You know, unfortunately, it comes down to how well the movie did. It depends on your personality. It depends on, like, I remember Poltergeist, you know, Toby Hooper has the credit for directing, but evidently Spielberg stepped in. And you can tell because it's got that Spielbergian sense of wonder. It's got the gruesome side of Toby Hooper, and kind of the family wonder of Spielberg, and it makes for a strange but fun combination.
Yeah, tag team.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it is weird. I mean, like, look, after Rogue One, Gareth Edwards has disappeared. Like, we know he's out there.
Well, he did get badly treated, but on Rogue One, so he might just be licking his wounds on that one.
Maybe. I don't know. Well, I remember seeing him speak at New York Comic Con a few years ago. I mean, look, he did Monsters with No Money. That guy was
Monsters was amazing.
That was a rogue. That's a rogue filmmaker for you.
Yeah.
He really did an amazing job, and maybe he just got burnt down on it. And there are some people that are artists. They're literally just, they're artists. They have no sense for, or want to have a sense of, not sense of the business, but they're not in, they don't want to be involved in that side of it.
Yeah. I got to talk to him at New York Comic Con and when Monsters came out, and he seemed like a really, like, just a gentle guy. And, like, he wasn't, you know, very full of himself, and and maybe this just
you were
wasn't
the same panel as I was then.
Maybe, yeah. I actually interviewed him on the floor.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. He was at the booth for Magnolia, and I just got the chance to sit down and talk with him. And
nice.
Super nice guy. And I was really happy that movie did well, and he got Godzilla. But man, I felt bad when Rogue One went badly.
I like Rogue One though, and I understand why certain changes were made. But I, you know, unfortunately, what it's been said, and this is a point that's come up more and more, especially with the Marvel Universe. And with Star Wars franchise rebooted, or, you know, continued. It's been pointed out that it's now a producer's medium. It's not a director's medium. That in these franchises, it becomes about the producer. So the guy that directed the first Hunger Games was out the door. He did not want to make another movie at that pace again.
Yeah.
So they just bring in someone else. Yep. And as long as you maintain the look and the cast and the overall vibe, I mean, the Harry Potter series, there are a lot of differences. Chris Columbus is a much more family-friendly filmmaker. I don't think he was going to go the dark route.
No.
Later directors did, but you didn't want that. The books changed. Mm-hmm. That's also based on an established property. But yeah, it's weird like how it is much more about who is actually producing. And like Jon Favreau is involved in The Mandalorian. He's directed some of it, and he created the show, but he didn't direct every episode.
No.
But there's enough of his
input. But it's his thing, yeah.
Yeah.
So we start this film with some very simple opening titles. Very quiet. I started turning up my volume when it started.
Yes.
And then I got this major jump scare when everything pops into this, all this footage of David Crouppen, who is played by Val Kilmer. And so we find him in a tent reading to the camera. And he talks about, in the clip at the beginning of the episode said, about sacrifice. And he talks about his increasing stature as a doctor and a lecturer and an educator. This is a really good scene setter, I think. You know, it really established that there's something creepy going on and it's all about him. And I dove right into it, admittedly. Kilmer fan, Val Kilmer podcast, but either way, it really got things going on a right foot.
You know, as far as watching my girlfriend, she was kind of tired, so she ended up going to bed early. She was her bed. I'd stay up super late. So first she wasn't as into it, but I think she started to get into it actually. She's like, now she wanted to see what the rest, I'll bring it over and she can watch the rest of it. But it's one of those movies where it's like a familiar premise at the beginning, because like I said, this is really ripping off The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then it goes in another direction.
Yes.
So how much do we tell people? Do you go through the whole movie?
Oh, yeah. No, there's no such thing as spoilers on this show. We dig in. So, you know, the thing is, like, when you have Kilmer in your pocket, which, you know, you know you're going to have him for a certain amount of time, this is not a bad way to use him. You know, you're establishing this is a real movie with a legitimate actor who has gravitas, and he is right there, and he's going to establish you need to take this seriously because it's Val Kilmer. And too many of these films use Val Kilmer in the wrong way. If you only have a limited amount of him, put him to the best use. And that's establishing what this film is all about.
Well, I think, and actually this is really the only role he could have done in this movie, I think. I don't think you'd want him to be anywhere else. But also, yeah, I mean, I think he has that world-weary vibe to him, because there's some people who've criticized the nature of his character, the motivation, whatever. So, and then we go into the whole thing where he invites his daughter. They've discovered that he's worried about global warming, and then they tranquilize that polar bear and they discover the woolly mammoth under the ice,
mm-hmm.
of course. And that's when the trouble begins.
Yeah. I mean, there's a scene early in this film, right after David Crouppen is doing his thing to direct the camera, where we get like a Blair Witch kind of shot of a woman with a hole in her head.
Yes.
And they are talking about there's a tick perhaps. And, you know, it's terrifying. Because a bug crawls out of this hole in her head and they try to grab it and it goes right back in. Oh my God. Like this, like you have me at this point. I'm not very good with bugs. I'll say that right off the bat. This movie got me immediately. When you see that bug come out of a person's head and then shoot back in and she screams, okay, I'm in. This is great.
And we're also at the level now where you can have basically video footage and digitize it like that. I mean, mm-hmm. that scene wouldn't have been possible probably 10 years earlier. It would have looked more digital than it does here.
Oh, yeah.
More realistic here.
Definitely. But we do follow that with a lot more digital footage, because we see a lot of archival footage of stories about overpopulation, global warming, the potential for disaster. And in the creepiest point, they lay the bug sounds over all this footage. It is terrifying, especially like you said, you watch this late at night. Watching this late at night will not let you sleep, because all you hear is this crawling bug sound while you're watching the world fall apart.
Yeah, and it's actually very effective, because there's a closing radio audio montage from radio stations about, again, what I like about the opening is how it establishes that there are some people who believe in global warming and people who think it's a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you have all this evidence that there's clearly a problem here. That's why I think COVID came along, to be honest.
Mm.
And, you know, it's
very possible.
It does set that up.
So we jump to the Canadian Arctic, and it's late spring. And like you said, Kilmer and his crew have been watching a polar bear. They tranquilize the polar bear. And like you said, they find this mammoth under the ice,
mm-hmm.
which anytime you find something under the ice, it's never a good scene. You know something bad is going to come here. And so, but they don't, we don't jump right into it, which is nice. They start, they lay out these points in nice pacing. They bounce back and forth between, because then we go to a classroom where students are watching David, I can't remember, David, we'll just say David, on the screen in the classroom. And we find out that some of the people in this class are going to go to work with him on his research. Now, originally, it's going to be four students, but then we find out it's going to be three. And so immediately I'm like, OK, well, obviously there's something wrong there if the, we lost one of the students.
Yeah.
So we meet the students. OK, I have to say here, the three students are named Atom, Ling, and Frederico. I mean, why make it, like, what's with these names? Like, it's way too odd to have three names like that for your three main characters of this film. It's like you're asking the audience to be like, to pay a special attention to their name, and that just takes you away from what they are as characters and what's going on in the film.
Well, but in a way, I mean, when I went to NYU, I mean, I met people with a lot of different, I went from like suburban Boston, and I had it was a fairly progressive town, but still you go there and you get people with unusual names, like, huh. Atom is kind of, does throw you, I didn't even think about it when until I was really rereading the synopsis, like Atom doesn't, it is, it makes you, it that may pull you out a bit because it's, and Frederico, you think the guy's actually more Italian than he is?
Yeah, I think the problem, I had less of a problem with Adam than I do with Frederico, because it's a name that you stumble over. It takes too, it's too many syllables for when you're saying it in a film with a lot of action and a lot of tension and you know, menace. You can't stop and say Frederico. And like, you need Fred, you need Bob. You need something that's gonna be just quick and easy to say, because there's a lot going on in this film.
See, that's what you should do now. You should do like a parody of one of these films, and everyone has a ridiculous name, ridiculously long name. So when they're trying to call out to each other, it becomes so damn complicated that it screws everything up. Like the Scary Movie equivalent.
I swear, because every time they said Frederico, I was like, oh, come on now. Like, that name is ridiculous for this film.
He probably would have a nickname, but some people don't. Some people are actually take their names, well, we take our names seriously, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, but Frederico. No, thank you. So we find out that David, you know, is calling somebody in the car, and they're driving in the hot weather, because obviously this film about global, you know, warming, about climate change.
Yeah.
So we have to really hammer that point home. And we find out that this is David's daughter named Evelyn. And we find that David has some problems with his daughter. They are definitely estranged because David skipped her mother's funeral. Which is that's a pretty sucky thing to do for your kid.
Yeah, not good. Like William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy. Well, it's a little different, but still. Not good either. But
I love the fact that she gets out of the car in traffic to take the phone call. Like, what is that? Who does that?
She seems a bit self-involved too. That is kind of a stumbling block, I think. I think my girlfriend did notice at the beginning where, like, it's a little whiny.
Yes.
Shouldn't be, because she's actually more, she's someone who actually has, seems to have a good heart and wants to do certain things. She's angry at her dad, but it's just played in a certain way, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And the friends that she has are kind of disposable college friends. So it doesn't really help.
Yeah, they're gone after that point. We just didn't need them, except for to get them to into the car to have a conversation on the 10, I think it is, in California, if I remember correctly. But as this is happening, we find out from one of David's guys that there is something up. There's something wrong in the Arctic. And we know everybody's headed to a collision course with something terrible, because 2 days later, David tells Evelyn, don't come up now. And so we're like, oh, okay. So now we're in trouble.
Of course, because when you tell someone not to come up, especially if they're your kid.
Yeah. Somebody who's very headstrong, as Evelyn is, will not listen. So now Nudie is the guy, one of the guys, native, who works with David. He's sick. And the woman, Jane, who's with David, she's sick. But I don't care. Evelyn says, I'm not going to listen. I want to come. And so she's now there with the three students, and they're heading up to the Arctic. And they talk about Evelyn's dad. Wouldn't you have a problem if you were the students having this girl? Like I would have said, no, she's not coming with us. She's wasting our time here, because she is so obnoxious about, oh, you know, well, the world's going to end anyway. Why not we just have a good time, when all they care about is saving the world?
Yeah. But then again, she's his daughter, so they don't have much of a choice. Yeah, I know. It's kind of, I think about it, like, would younger people bicker more than older people? But then, you know, I'm Gen X, and I look in social media, and I'm like, yeah, older people bicker now too. So middle-aged people and older days. But anyway, we get there.
Well, we get there, and there's no power. and it smells like death there. Now, if you're thinking The Thing, obviously at this point, you're thinking, you know, you're right, because this movie is definitely taking its cues from the, you know, John Carpenter film.
Yeah.
We're definitely setting up a situation where they are walking into a trap, essentially, because everything is against them in this place. Adam's there, Evelyn's there, and they split off, and then we find out that Frederica and Ling, they have a little conversation, and we find out that he betrayed her.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so now you're even going to have these two together. We couldn't even just have all these people be, you know, have their own individual characteristics, their own individual characters. No, we had to have a couple amongst this, because we know Adam and Evelyn, there's no doubt from the beginning we see them that they're going to pair off at some point.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely chemistry between them, and they're going to be interested in each other. But we didn't need to have Frederico and Ling be together as well. I thought that was
to have the horrifying sex scene later. I mean, that's
well, couldn't you have that between Adam and Evelyn? I mean, like, it's a little too on the nose to have these two together. It's just
because it's also a slightly teen oriented movie. That's the thing that's going on here. It's like they wanted to get a younger audience. I mean, these Ghost House Underground movies are interesting, but like when you look in the collection, Dance of the Dead is a zombie prom movie. Dark Floors is the Lordy movie, which is just very cartoony. The Substitute's pretty cool, actually. But it seems like a lot of these movies at the time, they kind of, there was a horror resurgence going on. And I think the studios were kind of caught between the more adult oriented horror kind of stuff, because people were starting to take it more seriously as an adult movie art form. And then the teen thing. And I think they were trying to maybe do both here, like have a socially conscious, ecologically conscious movie, but you still want to appeal to young people. So you have to have the sexual tension.
Well, tension. It's funny you mentioned tension, because this film does really good job at building tension.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Adam is exploring the base, and I'm not a sucker for, you know, your average, you know, horror tropes and horror beats in films. Yeah. I can see a jump scare coming, but this film did a nice job at making things tense, because, you know, it took advantage of the desolate area as well as sound. It did a really nice job of making sound a real part of this scene, this real setting.
Well, you know, and that's the interesting. And the interesting thing in comparing it to The Thing is that The Thing is really an Arctic environment. This is like it's almost becoming a post-Arctic environment. Like we're seeing climate change happen. So it's not as frozen over as it was. So that's where it kind of progresses that concept anyway. I never get the sense that they're really freezing up there. But
no,
you don't
not at all.
A breath in the air. So, like, okay, it's cold, but like not whatever.
Yeah, you don't need a light jacket.
Yeah, exactly.
So we should talk about Bart, because Bart is the helicopter pilot that brings them all up to the base.
Yeah,
and Bart is a sacrificial lamb. Basically, he fits the racial stereotype of the black guy who gets murdered in a horror film.
That's the 80s, man. The 80s all over again. Never dies.
So he's with them, and they find this polar bear, and he says, hey, take a picture of me with the polar bear. Why? Like, this film is a masterclass in bad decisions from its characters. So he stands by the polar bear and gets bit by something.
Of course.
I mean, come on. Like, you know, not going to go well. And at that point, then he tells Evelyn, oh, I heard a gunshot. Out of the blue. Like, it's like this film like had no ability to get across any kind of like plot progression without having people actually tell each other what the plot is. And it's like, oh yeah, by the way, that was a gunshot. Yeah, I know I heard it, but I figure you should know about it, even though it has no effect on them at all inside the base.
Yeah, you know, occasionally there's stuff like that, and you kind of like, what is someone thinking?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's almost like shortcuts. A few people, people do this with genre movies a lot, and it kind of pisses me off, you know? And it's like, I want to do a story on like the cliches, all the horror sci-fi cliches we just need to get rid of, because there's lots of them. Mm-hmm. And the cell phone dying is certainly one of them. And you know, but you just gave me an idea for satire. That's good. So yeah, I kind of shrug some of that stuff off.
So Evelyn actually decides, hey, I'm going to radio the field station to figure out what's going on. And she gets Jane, and David tells them to stay where they are. And Jane asks him, why are they here? And he says, we're doing the right thing. I mean, in retrospect, at the end of the film, sure, it makes sense because he has his perspective. Why didn't she question it at that point, though? Like, doing the what thing? What right thing? How is this the right thing to bring these kids into this situation?
There is something. Well, I think also, yeah, no, it is weird. They kind of retcon the movie in the movie. It's not like a sequel. It's almost like they do it later on. And maybe, I don't know, maybe he thinks his daughter's going to be on board, then he feels guilty. There are some things, we'll get into that later on. Yeah. Yes.
Well, just after this, Jane decides she shoots David and the assistant. And I was like, oh, we're 30 minutes into this movie and Val Kilmer's dead. Great. We did this again. I was so ready for him to be the end of the movie. I was like, this is such a bummer.
Because he's gone. We can afford the first third of the movie.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, come on. Like, yeah, I've dealt with this so often. There's a movie called Breathless that we covered on the show where he's dead in the first 10 minutes.
Oh, that's not the remake. Okay. It's not the Godard remake.
No, Val Kilmer never worked with Godard.
They did a remake of that. That's right. That was Richard Gere, I think, in the lady.
Yes, it was. Yeah. This was another Breathless, an entirely different Breathless. And he was dead 10 minutes into the film. And I was like, what? But in this case, you know, 30 minutes, he made it.
Law and Order appearances. Law and Order, right?
It's definitely better than Summer Love, in which he died before the movie started and is dead the entire film.
Does he show up in flashback, I'm assuming?
No, he's in the film as a corpse the entire time.
That really is like a Law and Order thing, okay.
Well, so the kids are all hanging out, you know, and as you mentioned, Frederico and Ling decide to have sex because, you know, what makes you hornier than, you know, being in the middle of this Arctic and people might be missing and there's, you know, weird stuff happening with a polar bear nearby.
It's just the second best. I guess it's the second best thing to the Mile High Club at that
point. Yeah, sex in the Arctic. The top of the Earth Club, I guess, or bottom of the Earth. I guess it's the bottom of the Earth, perhaps.
I think it's the Antarctic is bottom of the Earth.
Yes. So top of the Earth Club. Well, they're having sex and Frederico jumps up because he sees a bug, which, I'd jump up too if I saw these bugs because they are nasty little buggers.
They are.
And he has a big phobia of bugs and he just straight up leaves right out of sex. He just gets up and walks out of the room. I was like, wow, Frederico, really, he is surely scared of bugs. He had to just stop and go.
And that is true to life because I've heard stories of things like that where the guy is worried about something. He just leaves the girl there. Like, okay, the woman's not very happy you did that, but.
Yeah, I mean, you left her with the bug, by the way. That's your girlfriend. not a good idea. If you're really that scared of them, why would you leave her there?
And he, of course, is the cliche survivalist of the movie because you always have to have one guy that's going to screw everything up for everybody else. He's going to be the guy. That's him.
Well, that's what's interesting is that when you mention that is because this film definitely has very much a zombie feel to it, even though there's no zombies in the movie. It definitely has that everybody's keeping a secret about what happened to them with this illness. And everybody's in some state of decay, some state of dying, except for our two leads. We'll get to that. And so I don't know if they were going for that on purpose or it's just that we get that because of the scene that we're in, the settings. But I definitely felt like this was a kind of a zombie film in a way.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking also in comparing it to The Thing about the idea of the difference is The Thing, you have an alien that takes over other beings' bodies and transforms them, and here it's just a parasite that just eats people. It's decay, but it is decay. Yeah, there's a lot of different things you could sort of interpret in both of those films, actually. Which I'll well, there is a sort of a sense of decay because it's supposed to be ice there. I mean, itself, that whole area is slowly is dying.
It's true, yeah.
But it's picturesque death.
And as we see at this point, Bart wakes up and his arm is bleeding, which is not good. You know, you got bit. And then Ling wakes up shouting and she's covered in these bites. Now, this didn't make any sense to me because Bart got bit by one bug and screamed because it hurt so badly. She got bit all over her body and didn't make a peep and didn't wake up.
Yeah, that's yeah.
How does that work? It doesn't make any sense.
You were really hungover. Yeah, there's things that they do like that. That's another thing about movie logic, isn't it?
Yeah, this movie has real struggles with logic.
You know, what sucks, I like the theme of it, and I like the opening and closing of the movie.
Yeah, I also like the way it's made. It's really well made.
That's what's surprising about why this guy didn't make more films. But then again, you know, all depends on if people were pulling the strings. I don't know. But anyway.
Evelyn tries to find her dad. Is he still alive? Don't think so, because they can't get there because the helicopter's been sabotaged because Jane came back. And Jane, oh man, this scene. Okay, so they take her in. She's struggling to breathe. And then there's this like brown, gray, green stuff coming out of her mouth. She mumbles, "Don't let them leave." And Evelyn attempts to do CPR on her. I screamed out loud when this happened.
Don't.
I was like, no, don't do that.
you're that guy in the theater.
I'm not normally like that. This was so horrifying, the idea that she was going to put her mouth on her mouth with that stuff coming out of it. And like, I was just like, no, this is terrifying. I hate this. I hate this scene.
Bad. I mean, it gives you a good sense of Evelyn's character that she's willing to do that. I mean, you want to talk about the theme of sacrifice. She's better than her dad at doing that. But yeah.
She at this point is like, hey, whatever happens, happens. And then she's like, I'll dive face first into this mouthful of goo to help this woman.
Yeah, but then she doesn't want someone to shoot her later on. So it's like...
Yeah, she doesn't have exactly the strongest, conscience going on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
Well, they decide to seal off the room to protect them because, you know, obviously this is not going well. And Adam, I hate that his name is Adam, even though I know it's a, I think part of it is that this is a Canadian film. And so Adam is a legitimate, Adam McGoyan.
I love Adam McGoyan, yeah.
You know, it's a Canadian name, I'm sure. Although, as somebody who loves hockey and is very entrenched in Canadian media between all the TV shows and all that, I've never heard another person named Adam besides Adam McGoyan.
I'm going to look this up because Adam McGoyan is Armenian also. Adam was a Christian martyr. Yeah, it makes me wonder where they, and I wonder what they're trying to say with that. What are they actually trying to say? I don't know. Was it a cool name? Are you supposed to think of science?
Maybe that's the case. I wish they would have explained it then.
Science, either. He distracted me with science. I don't know.
Like, it would have took one line for him to be like, somebody would be like, your name's Adam? And he's like, yeah, my parents are both scientists. You know, like, or something like that.
And there's no backstory for any of the other characters, so we have no idea.
Yeah, nobody has any history.
Except it is kind of like an 80s slasher movie that way.
No, they're all just stereotypes and they'll knock them off one by one.
And yet, once again, a well-made movie with an interesting theme. All right, onward.
Well, while Bart tries to fix the copter, even though his arm is basically falling apart, Evelyn and Adam try to go find the field station to see if they can find David now that, Jane came back. And they find the mammoth underground that David's team found, and they see the stuff moving in it. I mean, have you ever seen a centipede?
It's been a while since I've seen a real centipede, but they're long.
So a house centipede is particularly scary. It has very long, like ganglia-style legs.
Yes.
And one morning I was in my office and it was like 6 a.m, nobody was there. And I have a lamp that points at the wall and a house centipede crawled up the wall into the light. And so now I have not only the legs, but the shadows of the legs as well. So it looks completely horrifying. I screamed out loud, what the hell is that? And I ran out of the building. How do people not have that sense of self-preservation to get away from things that are moving and crawling?
Well, there's some guys that are macho. They'll say that, oh, it's just a bug, which that's true. I don't like bugs.
No.
So funny story. So a friend of mine from college, he and I were watching The Exorcist on his big TV in the loft, and it was East 12th Street in New York. This is 30 some years ago, and so we're watching it, and this giant water bug, about 4 inches long, comes out from under the TV at the moment that her head starts spinning around. We're like a couple of like little kids, and we back away, and this thing starts crawling along the floor. And he had a loft, so the wall is going up to his bed, the perch where his bed is going up and up and up the wall. We're like, oh, geez, it's going up to your bedroom, quote unquote. What are we going to do? And it keeps going. It starts going into the closet. Finally, we get like one of his, like one of those, suit, those bags that you take on planes. Why am I forgetting the name of it? But like, just like a carry on, and we just had to stomp on it to squish the bug. So, and it was like, I'm like, God, we're so wimpy. Like, we did leave, because of course it had to come out at the exact moment
of
in
course.
The movie.
Yeah.
And it freaked us out. And so that was hilarious. Yeah. Bugs are bad.
Yeah. I don't understand how anybody in this film is just like, so cavalier about bugs.
Some people are not, something is, I don't like spiders. I had an ex-girlfriend who had 2 pet tarantulas in a terrarium.
Nope.
And one day we went out and she came back and she'd forgotten to put the top on.
Oh no.
And amazingly, they did not get out. But I'm like, yeah, how are you gonna explain that to your landlord?
Yeah.
By the way, we've got two tarantulas if you just along in the house somewhere.
If you see them, let me know.
She wasn't afraid. And what was interesting about it is when she had an apartment and lived on a major highway, it was like, I hear the roar of cars outside and then there's the crickets in the tank because that's what it ate. I forgot about that. Yeah, I don't know. Some people are not freaked out. She wasn't freaked out about touching it. She wasn't freaked out about putting the bugs in there. But yeah, I don't know. There's some people who just,
Well, that's these people for sure, except for Frederico, because they are
afraid of everything, I think.
Yeah, they are more than happy to be even there's a scene at one point where the room is full of these bugs, like crawling with these bugs. And Evelyn decides, I'm going to go in there because I have to get the camera. Like she had to get the camera from a jacket. I'm like, no, you don't. You do not have to get that camera.
I'll chalk that one off to adrenaline. I'll just let that go. Because sometimes there are people that do things they would never do under normal circumstances. And I'll forgive that one. But some other ones, I'll be like,
I don't know. If I saw a bug make, you know, a person into their own personal, like, you know, habitat, I'm not going near those bugs. Well, they go out to the field. They find a grave. And they, so obviously Evelyn is like, oh, it's my dad's grave. And she starts digging at the grave, as people do. And say, they make her so, like, you know, such a trope, where she goes, he's gone and I still hate him. It's like, come on, man. Like, just like make this a well-rounded character. Don't do that to her. Well, get back to the base. And again, this movie has some seriously twisted visuals that it loves to pull out. Like,
yeah,
the fact that Frederico's going to the bathroom and he's peeing blood.
Yeah.
That's like not great.
That's every dude's nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then he goes to Ling and accuses her of giving him an STD. And then she throws up that stuff that Jane threw up. Yeah. And then immediately he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's like, dude, you just accused her of giving you an STD and you're peeing blood and she's vomiting this goo. And you're like, oh, sorry, baby.
Yeah, he deserved that.
You need to get out of there. It's not good.
Well, he is the problem, though. He pretty much wants to shoot everybody at a certain point.
Yeah, he is a real problem in this film. He tries to call for help and things aren't going well. And Ling is now a mess because now the bugs are all getting through her system. They're killing her. She goes to check on Jane. Evelyn goes to check on Jane to see what's going on with her in a room they sealed off. Why? Now, part of it is like, I'm thinking, we both watched this during a pandemic where we are told not to come in contact with people. Perhaps we're way more sensitive about intimate contact than people were when this film was made. But I think I would have been, even at the time, been like, no, I'm not going in a sealed room where there's bugs.
Yeah, exactly.
6 feet's a good distance to keep.
Well, but we didn't think about that stuff. I mean, I think of I post-pandemic, or not post-pandemic, but post-start of the pandemic, a year in, I've thought about some of the filthy habits that people have.
Mm.
How many times have you seen guys leave men's restrooms and they don't wash their hands?
Oh, yeah.
Are you freaking kidding me? Or the fact that some people sneeze and don't cover their nose.
Mm.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we're going to be reevaluating. Hence your question about movie theaters.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think I'll skip it for a while.
I keep thinking about is, are there going to be buffets ever again?
Buffets were a bad idea to begin with. I haven't done a buffet in years. And I remember going to one place out here and I was with someone who's vegetarian. And it was over in Deer Park, and it was just terrible, even with meat eaters. She was vegetarian, I was meat eater, and just not. I was like, wow, this is bad. And you think about it, it's like, I even think about Stop and Shop and those donuts. I used to always pick out the donuts because you get the tongs, you get like the cool. Now they seal them up. I'm like, you know what? This is what they should have done this to begin with.
Yeah, why was
my four
thing?
Donuts at once rather than one or two? But like, yeah, you really shouldn't be just taking stuff out of these trays.
Yeah, just touch everything. Go for it.
Yeah.
Jane's body then gives birth to a bunch of bugs, which is terrible. And then we get the next great moment, which is Bart starts cutting off his arm.
That's a happy spot, yeah.
Wow. So, like, as he's doing this, Adam and Evelyn are just standing there watching. Like, I know there's, like you said before, adrenaline. You can do a lot of things without thinking about it just because of the energy and the momentum that's happening.
I would not be looking. I'd be horrified. I mean, I'd be feeling bad for the guy and horrified at the same time.
Yeah. I don't think I could be there as somebody cuts their arm off.
They, you know, there's probably something, and this is where, you know, you're bringing these things up and I'm looking at the running time of the movie of 94 minutes. I'm thinking, you know, all these things that you're mentioning would have cut it down to like 80 minutes. So this is probably, you know, you wanted to just stretching out the, I mean, you just saw this at Miramax. I mean, I was working for the office manager, and the head of development stole me away, and I'm still friends with him. He's like, don't waste your time with this person. Like, swear for me. You know, I read a lot of scripts that came through, and there's a lot of that stuff where it's like the easiest thing to do. And you just think, man, if they just worked a little harder, you know, and even though, yes, this is not a realistic movie, quote unquote, given what you're dealing with, you can have elements of realism that then suck you in more rather than
pull
you up.
Yeah, I mean, when they start cutting off his arm, I mean, they take this giant, like, butcher hatchet, and, like, she takes, like he takes a swing, and then she takes a swing. It almost becomes comedy.
Yeah, it's gruesome.
Yeah, it's gruesome, but they're playing it almost like it's a silly thing, because they're, like, attacking him with this hatchet and, like, messing it up.
It is. It is, like... Yeah, at that point, I think I was so distracted by the gruesomeness of it. But then I'm thinking back on it again, I was like, yeah, that's a little off. And I think they're hoping you're only going to see it once. And then, like, you watch it again, you're like, oh, wait.
Yeah.
Motivation's not there.
No,
again,
it's not.
Dragging the movie out. So it's not 75 minutes.
75 minutes long. Unfortunately, when they chop his arm off, the bugs still hatch, which is like, oh, boy, he's really in trouble now. And then they burn the bugs, but then hold the hand. Like, in their bare hands. I'm like, nobody understands what contact is in this film. I mean,
they don't understand personal boundaries.
No, this is it's so frustrating. Like, you know, because like you said, all it would have taken is pass it to one other person who didn't write it and say, does this make sense? Like, just take a pass.
You really do wonder about the development process of a lot of these movies. And I think this was at a time when a lot of films were getting made and everyone was rushing out horror films, for better or for worse. And still today. I mean, look, and Netflix now is a dumping ground for some really bad movies.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think Netflix had some cool horror films like The Awakening, you know, with Rebecca Hall. And it's just gone downhill. And because, or so the streaming services are snatching them up.
Yeah, I mean, all you need is a couple, you know, people late at night watching and you got a hit. Well, Evelyn, you know, trying to figure out what's going on here, finds her father's notes and tapes, which are incredibly detailed. I mean, there's like intricate anatomical drawings of these bugs. I don't know how they were doing this in the situation they had there, but they really got in depth on these bugs to the point where they realized they're not bugs, that they're invertebrates. And I was like, wow, like, you know, how did they do all this research when it seems like nobody there knew what was going on at all? Was it just David was doing all this research and everybody was blind to what he was doing?
Yeah. You know, well, he clearly has this other agenda. And I even wonder with his colleague who got shot, how much his colleague knew about his agenda.
Mm.
You know what I mean? There's something like, he's saying we're doing the right thing, but I don't think he doesn't tell anybody anything. And it isn't until the end, you're like, oh, this guy really wants this stuff to be unleashed on the world.
So yeah, it's a very interesting change. So a twist that I never would have seen coming.
Yeah.
Especially since I thought he was dead.
Exactly.
Well, she goes to get the tape, the camera, so she can play these tapes. I didn't even think they had power. I forgot when they actually got power in the building, but I guess that happened at some point.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that.
Because at that point, when they said, let's watch the tapes, I'm like, wait, how? They said there was no power when they got there, but I guess Bart probably loaded something up at some point when he was off screen.
Some scenes that are lit. It's not all in the dark.
No.
I know it's how we don't remember.
When they felt like lighting things, they lit them. They shot them out of order. Well, at this point, she gets the bugs on her, and Frederica's like, you got to strip so I can make sure you don't have bugs, and holds her at gunpoint to force her to strip. I have to say, I am impressed by the self-restraint the director had to not show us her naked, because I was like, this is the moment they're going to go for that titillation.
Well, they made it. They actually made it the ugly thing that it was.
Mm-hmm.
And showed you what a misogynist he is.
Yeah, which is impressive, because you're usually in a film, a low-budget horror film, that's a chance to show some flesh, and, you know, they didn't go for it.
No, and who knows? I mean, who knows if it was cut out or if the director and the actor are like, yeah, no, we're not doing this. They don't need to anyway.
No.
No.
It would have been completely...
That was actually good, yeah. I mean, actually, it's also not necessary, but I guess in a way, it really cements his character more and more. It's despicable, even though he is, but...
So they go to labs, there's bugs everywhere, and somehow Ling is awake now?
Yep, but she's not going to be awake for long.
There's no rules to this film. People get sick and then get better. Some people get sick and just die.
And then they watch her die. They can't have her leave the room that she's in, I think.
No, not at all. In fact, unfortunately, because Frederico is an idiot, he shoots her and breaks the window, laying the bugs out.
Yeah, like a scientist.
That's the thing. Okay, you've just pointed something out. These are all students in a science class who are supposed to be the best in the class, and that's why they get sent on this trip, and they're idiots. What is this school?
The best and brightest we've got.
Yeah, where is this school? What?
I'm telling you, you're going to need to write the satire for this kind of whole genre now.
We get a bit more of the zombie idea here, because then they say to Frederico, hey, did you get bit? And he refuses to let them show. And that's so classic zombie, where the guy, you know, there's one guy who got bit and he won't let it, them know it and hides it from them. I was like, yeah, this movie is really leaning hard into the zombie feel.
Makes me think of Ted Nugent, who just announced he had COVID.
Mm.
He got COVID recently, but he still doesn't believe in vaccines. Like, this guy's in denial. I got bit, but I'm okay.
It's ridiculous.
There are people that stupid out there. And of course, if it's, again, yeah, you know, it's funny. When I rewatched it, it was late at night, and I like kind of let a lot of people go, yep, okay, keep going.
It's definitely a movie where you kind of have to just suspend.
I was really thinking more about Val Kilmer at that point.
You really have to suspend your disbelief to get through this film. But at this point, Frederico is trying to get away because he has a gun, and Kilmer shows up and shoots him and kills him.
He's going to shoot them too. He's going to shoot.
Yeah, he's going to shoot Adam and Evelyn. But Kilmer saves the day. But unfortunately, there's another tape that Evelyn watches before they can figure this all out. And it's revealed that Kilmer infected himself in order to teach people a lesson. I did not see that coming at all. And yet
he's still alive, which is interesting.
Yeah, how?
That part is not that when I was watching it again, I'm like, so what does that mean exactly? Does like, is it sensing that it has a benevolent host? Or is it, I think, again, that's the thing that does throw it off there. Like, he should be dead.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and why did he not die?
One of the themes, common themes in the show is giving films way more credit than they deserve. And maybe he's out in the Arctic in the cold, it, you know, stopped the bugs.
Yeah, you know, well, it's a good point. That's the only time we see a bug out in the cold. But yeah, that part I was rewatching those scenes again today. I'm like, yeah, so he's still alive. So what, does he have a conversation, like a psychic conversation with this bug, this alien that he's now hosting? Like, yeah, dude, let's go back to civilization. Let me spread around.
Where with you, Val?
I don't know. Yes, then of course, you know, he wants to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And he locks them in.
Yeah, pretty cold. I mean, to lock your own daughter into the base and try to get away to destroy the world.
As the helicopter's arriving too, the other rescue helicopter that's coming in.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was going to be a classic 70s downer ending where he did get away with it. Because I was like, how are they going to stop this? Yeah. Well, they end up breaking out of the base and Adam grabs a hold of the helicopter to try to stop it.
He's getting away in because these two guys are taking him. He's like, oh, they're quarantined.
Yeah,
you gotta let them, and they don't actually question this at all.
No,
I mean, they trust him, obviously. He's like, we're in quarantine, they'll be fine, we'll come back, whatever. And yeah, he hangs off the helicopter.
Wow, the helicopter goes up. Something I did not expect to happen, but Adam falls off the helicopter and dies. I was like, wow, like, you know, this movie is really going for it with a downer ending. Like, our heroes are all going to die.
I joke with people and they say no spoilers. I go, everybody dies. I tell people, whatever movie it is, even if it's a rom-com, everyone dies. Really? Oh, there's a joke. So a friend of mine, you know, used to work at Virgin, and they'd play Titanic a lot. Or they were talking to someone who'd never seen Titanic, and she's like, don't ruin the ending for me. She's like, the boat sinks. How could you ruin that? It's, you don't know the Titanic? Yeah. Seriously?
It's the metaphor for failure.
All right, so the helicopter. So then the helicopter goes up. He dies, and then Evelyn shoots at the helicopter. Right?
Yeah, blows up the helicopter basically with her rifle, I guess. Yeah, she's a good shot, which we've never had before. We've never known that she could shoot a rifle. Again, something you probably want to establish a little earlier in the film.
She gets lucky, and it crashes into the base.
Yeah, and blows everything up.
And she stays in the rescue the other helicopter that was damaged by Jane. Mm-hmm. And then people come to pick her up. And that's when they do that voiceover of her talking to people about what her dad did.
Yeah.
It's a radio interview, I think.
Yes, it is. Yep. With Evelyn. Yeah. I don't know if they meant it as a sequel tease or as a nothing in this film mattered tease, because a guy is out fishing with his dog and the dog is checking out a dead crow. And then you see that the dead crow has the bugs on it. Now, I was like, wow, this is really kind of cool, because the film never showed you really the crows before.
Yeah.
But they were always in the background in the soundtrack.
Yes.
You constantly heard crows in the background. I was like, that is giving the audience a lot of credit to say, hey, do you remember you heard the crows and now they're here with the bugs close to a city? And now we're really going to be in trouble because now the bugs have made it to civilization.
Well, you know, and what's interesting about that is it's this dog that's eating this bird. Mm-hmm. So really what it says is that there was a bird up there. A bird mm-hmm. must have must have gotten there somehow, feasted on something, part of the woolly mammoth, whatever, because it's not, it's cold, but it's not as cold as it used to be. I could sort of imagine a bird being up there, but it's like, I don't know if a raven, I don't know if that would happen, but it is interesting that then this, the dog gets into the car with this hunter and they're at a lake, but the lake is really adjacent to a big city. I'm not sure what's, I think part of this was, where was the shot again?
Vancouver.
Yeah. So it, you see the city in the background.
Mm-hmm.
It could be in Stanley Park.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's kind of interesting how they're actually very close to civilization. And the idea with this audio montage or radio montage, again, of these voices debating what's going to happen as the end times could come with this, like, so if someone says, you know, SARS 2, SARS 3, something of the big one's going to come.
Yeah.
And ironically, about a decade after this movie comes out, we get COVID.
Yeah. It didn't feel good watching that moment in this moment. Like, cause she says it's only a matter of time before the big one hits. And I'm like, I look around. I'm like, yeah, we got it.
Yeah, I mean, I do like the ending. That's the thing. There's a lot of flaws in this movie, and I just concentrate in the beginning and the end because, yes, there could have been a better movie here.
Mm-hmm.
There could have been a better movie. At the same time, that's the thing. It's like there was a more serious story happening. I mean, I think the ending is creepy. The fact that, you know, there's something coming and we're not going to stop it. Even if this guy, even if they had stopped this guy from doing it, something else was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so in the era of COVID, it feels very important.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then I was thinking about The Thing and the fact that The Thing isn't so much that, but then I almost think about, I almost relate The Thing to politics now, because I think about the idea of these guys being trapped in this room and suddenly you don't know who's the good person, who's the bad person. And it starts to make you think of all the conspiracy theorists and the cultists last year and all these people who discovered that some people in their family and their circle of friends were crazy.
Yeah, definitely.
And it almost, that almost, I mean, a lot of Carpenter stuff does have social or political undercurrents where the people discuss it. I mean, They Live, very clearly.
That's absolutely
on the nose. But a lot of his films, even like Halloween, is like the idea that suburbia is not safe the way you think it is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not that slasher movies weren't taking place. Well, they took place in the countryside a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, just the whole notion that just fairly well-populated suburb could become a place where people get murdered.
Yeah.
But there were other movies he did that had, even Prince of Darkness, there's just things going on that are interesting. And both of these films kind of carry that. The Thing is not so much to think about it. I almost think The Thing is about infection, but like I said, you can almost think about infection of ideology in a way, even if that wasn't intended at the time. And this is just straight up infection.
Yeah, it's a little more, you know, social commentary about environmentalism, definitely here.
And again, I don't know if you, but I've gotten so frustrated with a lot of people. And you look at this doctor, he'd probably be sitting there smiling like at all the stuff that's going on now.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's just terrible that, like, you know, unfortunately in Hollywood movies, a lot of the bad people get it and not the good, in this case, but good and bad people were killed by this thing, these things. But yeah, I mean, the moral, I don't know, it, you know, it's a very flawed movie, but I do like aspects of it. And again, if you're into cult movies, you forgive a lot of that stuff. I was focusing on like Kilmer stuff but yeah, I noticed like, yeah, there's things here that just don't quite jive. And again, that's the problem. You felt like there was a more adult movie underneath, and I think they were trying to go for a teen audience at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's what undermines it. A lot of what you're talking about are plot point issues, mm-hmm. as opposed to thematic issues.
Yes.
And that's where I think, you know, they go off the rail. I think a lot of these Ghost House Underground movies kind of wanted to get that audience, even though some of them are, like The Substitute, I think is a really interesting movie. It's not like it's a original concept, but about these kids who think their substitute teacher's an alien.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really done, it's done in a creepy way. I have to watch it again and see if it holds up now. You know, whatever, 13 years later, 12 years later. But some of these movies, they were trying to definitely go for a younger audience. Dance of the Dead, for sure.
Mm.
That's a fun movie, speaking of zombies. Yeah. But
this one definitely, I think, is a one-watch deal. You can't watch this a second time and have it hold up.
But I had to for this podcast, so.
I'm sorry.
That was fun. I had a good time. So what reviews, I'm trying to remember the reviews. You said you had a whole bunch of reviews, didn't you?
Yeah, we will get to that. But first, we want to hear from Val Kilmer.
It's time for a reading from the Book of Val.
Our reading today comes from Val Kilmer's memoir, I'm Your Huckleberry. Unsurprisingly, there's no mention of the thaw in his book. He does not talk about it at all. But considering this was a phase of his career where paying the bills was the key motivator, I thought this passage was interesting. Seems kind of important and useful to me, being able to heal yourself. As a kid, I felt it brewing. As an adult, it has come to full flower. It's a subtle religion by nature, as its main tenets are prayer, study, and solitary, interior acts of tenderness. That doesn't mean I haven't led a frenzied life. That frenzy is still alive and well. It does mean, though, that I have never lost my faith to what seems to be the kind of materialism that leads nowhere. Nowhere of value, anyway. Never met a super wealthy person where money obviated any of the basic challenges of finding happiness in the material world. Money can't buy me love. Although he did end up making a lot of films for money.
Well, I always say that money doesn't buy you happiness, it buys you freedom.
Yes.
So that can lead to happiness if you know what you're doing. I mean, even in this podcast world, you know, we're building up our audience. And like, mm-hmm. if you're a celebrity off the bat, you're already up here.
Yep.
The money behind you already up here, and everyone else, we all have to work it.
Yep. Absolutely.
And that's a frustrating thing, but that's, you know,
it's a game.
It is the game. Yes. It kind of drives me up a wall, but you know, that's the challenge, I guess.
Certainly. Well, we've heard from Val, we've heard from ourselves, so let's hear from some others.
Come, children, let's explore the kills and valleys.
So kills and valleys are the best and worst reviews of this film. You know, as is usually the case when it comes to these direct-to-video films, on Rotten Tomatoes, there's almost nothing. This film has no rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It has just one recognized review from Steve Barton of Dread Central.
Yes.
He said, what started out looking like a sharp brooding thriller thaws into a melting glacier of cliches that should be familiar to anyone who has seen numerous other films with similar scenarios, not to mention a popular first season episode of The X-Files, from which the thaw appears to borrow a tremendous amount of its plot from. There was a good movie here, but it lost its way. Can't argue with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty accurate. I like the promise of what it had.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think the beginning and the ending are good. And so mm-hmm. maybe we just need to trim it down.
Yeah, tighten it up.
You are the fan cut of like 35 minutes and you're pretty much there.
In and out. I also found a review from Noel Murray of the AV Club who gave it a C. The thaw sports some genuinely scary bug effects, but the action is slow to load and interrupted by dumb character choices and too many "when will people realize that global warming is a real problem" speeches. It does, you know, try to have it, you know, heavy on the messaging. And that, I think that does take a bit away from it. I don't think you needed to be on the, you know, hammer on the nail with those things.
Well, you know, it's not what you say, it's the way you say it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge of any of these movies now. We're in a horror and sci-fi, particularly horror overload in the last 20 years. It's been amazing, the horror renaissance of the 21st century.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. But at the same time, you start to run into a lot of the same problems.
Mm-hmm. Over on Amazon, the unwashed masses have left us a surprising 518 reviews, which is a lot for a film like this.
That many? Wow.
Yeah. And of these reviews, 49% were 5 stars. It was actually good and not as bad as people made it sound. It's simple. Some climate change group comes across a fully intact mammoth corpse and later finds out inside its corpse it's got some prehistoric ticks. And that's where it gets nuts, since they can hide under the skin. I mean, really surface level review, but...
There's one about character motivation in there, isn't there? I found one like that.
I definitely remember seeing one about that. I was like, well-acted sci-fi horror film with an original and clever premise. Creepy and freaky. Better than most prime horror. And it's Val Kilmer.
Win-win for that.
Exactly.
Person.
Anything with Val Kilmer. I mean, that's what's funny is that he has such a fan base that they just pump his stuff on Amazon all the time. Like, you know, you're going to read at least half the reviews if Val Kilmer's in a film are going to be Val Kilmer is hot or Val Kilmer sucks in this, one or the other.
Interesting. Well, yeah. And you have to take all these kind of reviews with a grain of salt. It's like going on to Yelp and seeing a restaurant get tons of 5-star reviews. It depends what kind of food they like.
Yes.
Like good or not.
Exactly. 7% of the Amazon reviews are 1-star. Many of them were complaints about the film's environmental themes. Angry that it dare suggest that climate change was man-made. The entire time it's shoving man-made global warming crap down your throat, ignoring the simple and easy to research facts that it's not true.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
I didn't care for it. I would not recommend this movie. Straight and to the point.
Let me tell you something. One of my neighbors here is religious and said, you know, and even and conservative, but agrees with me on climate change. And she says it's God's way of telling us that we're not taking care of the planet.
Like, makes
whatever
perfect
you
sense.
Want to believe, one on the same side, I'm good.
Yeah. I mean, I saw there was some meme online where it was like, God, why didn't you tell me, you know, to take care of myself from COVID? And it's like, I sent you vaccines. I sent you, you know, scientists. What do you want?
Yeah, exactly.
The thaw has a couple of things going for it. The interesting setting and the special effects. However, the writing is awful and the characters all behave like idiots.
Okay.
That's the one, I think.
Tell us how you feel.
That covers it. So we have a decision to make.
With or without Val.
Does Val Kilmer make or break this film?
Yeah, because all the critical scenes are pretty much with him.
Yeah.
And he actually does a good job. Some people might think he's not even acting that much, but I think you do get that sense of fatigue that he's, even though I've heard the argument that there's not enough character motivation on his part to do what he did. I don't know that we actually need that. Mm. I mean, we do, but the way he presents it, you can get the, you can just see he has a good presence. There's more they probably could have ramped up a little bit with that, maybe showing the life he had as a scientist prior to that. But I think that they were smart to get him because said that yourself. Without him at the beginning, it's not going to work. You could get a really good actor, but he had a good presence here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his gravitas made you believe that this guy would do something so insane as to infect himself with a parasite that's going to destroy the world.
And he doesn't act crazy. That's the best part.
Yes. No, he's not over the top like a.
He didn't act a little loopy. He acts very rational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you easily could have went into a Nick Cage, Jim Carrey kind of, I'm a crazy scientist, but he went for the I'm a scientist who has his own reasoning to do this, and it may not be a great idea, but it's what he believed in.
Yeah.
So we have covered today's film, and now I'd like to play a game called The Thing or the Thaw. Okay. I'm going to give you a fact, and you will tell me whether it has to do with the thing or with the thaw, because obviously there's a lot of similarities between these two films. Okay?
All right.
So the first one, this film runs 1 hour and 49 minutes.
That's the thing.
That is correct. The thing is 1 hour and 49 minutes, but this one is much shorter.
15 minutes shorter.
This film was shot primarily in British Columbia.
I think that's the thaw.
That is the thaw. The thing, only two scenes were shot in British Columbia.
Because I thought part of it was, but this, we were talking about,
Yeah, primarily the thaw was shot in British Columbia.
Makes sense.
This film was originally titled Frozen.
I assume it's the thaw.
You are correct. The thaw. 3 for 3.
I forget what the original, I don't know if they had another title for the thing.
We'll get to that. This film was nominated for an award for its score.
That would be the thing.
It was. Do you know what award it was nominated for?
If it was for score, it would be best original score.
No, it was nominated for worst original score as a Razzie.
Really?
Yeah, by Ennio Morricone. Can you believe that?
I'm surprised, actually.
It's shocking.
The Razzies are often pretty good, but sometimes I don't know.
It was the early years of the Razzies. I think they were misguided in that one for sure.
As the British would say.
This film won a Leo Award for Best Makeup.
A Leo Award. I'm going to say the thing, definitely.
That was the thaw.
Was it the thaw? Really?
The thaw won a Leo Award, which is given to the films made in British Columbia.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Yeah, I've never even heard of the Leo Award, so there you are.
A little misdirect.
Well, was the thing nominated for an Oscar for visual effects?
I don't know for sure. I'd have to look that up. I would be surprised if it was, only because it wasn't very well received at first.
No, I got the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films for Best Horror Film and Best Special Effects. You know what? You're right, because it was too gruesome for the time. It freaked people out.
It definitely earned its audience on home video.
Okay.
Next one. This film shares a special effects makeup creator with The Great Outdoors and Airplane.
That's going to be the thing.
That is correct. The thing shares its special effects creator with
time to those the other one, yeah.
The Great Outdoors. Two very similar films.
Well, it depends how you want to look at it.
They are both outdoors.
Yes.
One of the actors piloted one of the helicopters on screen.
I might actually say the thaw.
Sorry, it was the thing. Kurt Russell actually flew one of the helicopters during the film.
It's been a while. Interesting.
Next one. This film was shot by the director of photography of V.I. Warshawski.
It was shot by the director of photography, V.I. Warshawski?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to... good question. Probably the thing.
It was The Thaw, shot by Jan Kieser.
Interesting.
Kind of an interesting career.
See, if of course I knew we were asking questions, I'd be all prepared, but then that takes the fun away from it.
Exactly.
Exactly. You're smart. Fabulous.
This film was based on the short story, Who Goes There?
Well, that's the thing.
Yes.
Although interestingly enough, someone said that this was a ripoff of an X-Files episode, which is actually inspired by the same story that inspired The Thing.
Everything is in a circle.
Novella. I mean, so it's really not a ripoff of the X-Files, Criminal on the X-Files, it's The Thing.
It all comes back to The Thing.
Yeah.
This film features actors who appeared on Supergirl, Smallville, and Arrow.
Well, that's going to be the thaw.
Correct. Steph Song, Sebastian Gacki, and Kyle Schmid, the three young leads of the film. And your final question.
Okay.
This film featured the cigarette-smoking man, William B. Davis, from The X-Files.
The thaw.
Correct, the
right
thaw.
There at the beginning opening montage.
I missed him at first. I didn't realize it. And then I was like, oh, yeah, it's the guy at the end of the montage.
I didn't watch The X-Files tons, but I was like, yeah, I know that guy.
I was like, oh, yeah, look at that. So the episode was, you know, the film, people say it was based on an episode with a guy who was in the film.
There you go. It just comes all full circle.
Well, that's it for this episode of KilmerCast. I'd love to thank you, Brian, for joining me to just talk about this misguided, but I think well-made film.
Oh, yes. And I just want to quickly plug my podcast too, Side Jams, just because it's something different where I interview musicians about their outside passions and hobbies. So I've gone in a lot of different areas. I just talked to Perry Farrell about like snowboarding and mysticism and alien and artificial intelligence. I interviewed Jeff Pilson, who was in Dawkins and now in Foreigner, about meditation, talked to Orianthi about traveling and cooking. So we have fun with Serge Tonkin about activism, obviously. So I like doing stuff like that. Yeah, like, you know, you and I have something that's unusual and different. And I think it's fun for people that way.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's one of my dreams is at some point to maybe interview Val Kilmer as part of the series. Is there somebody that you are just dying to talk to you for Side Gems?
Oh, God, there's a lot of people. I mean, I'm trying to get, there's a few people. I mean, there's so many musicians that I've already interviewed. But, you know, I have a good in with Judas Priest. So I've interviewed one of their members. I'd love to get Rob on. I'd love to get Amy Lee from Evanescence on. I've interviewed Sammy Hagar before about his tequila, but I think that would be kind of fun. At the same time, I'd like to talk to some younger people just to see what makes them tick. You know, you never know what you're going to get. That's the thing. St. Vincent, she'd be fun. I mean, she's really interesting. I have no idea what her side jams would be, but I think she'd be cool. It was fun to get Orianthi to do that. And God, it's just like, people ask me questions like that, then my mind becomes a blank. Like, who else am I going to interview? I actually, honestly, I want to get John Carpenter because I've interviewed him before, but he's a big video game fan.
Oh, yeah.
That would be cool. I actually talked to him about his video games. I've talked to him about his music and scores, but that would be cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea of the show is such a great idea to take somebody who people care about in one area and find out about a totally different area that they really are passionate about outside of that realm.
Well, that's what I've been doing with my whole career for the past 25 years, you know, and you get into these conversations. I interviewed Evangeline Lilly about Ant-Man, and then she talked about her children's books. And it was this great side conversation, which I couldn't use in the story. Or I interviewed Stephen Bochco before he died, and he gave me tips on how to make a great TV show, which I couldn't put in the story. Like, there's these things that, you know, either related to their field or not, that you want to be able to put somewhere. And it goes all over the place. I try to keep it short, but they seem to be getting longer and longer. So.
Well, you know, as long as you enjoy them and you feel like they're going somewhere, that's the important thing.
Exactly. All right, man.
Well, in our next episode, we're going to return to 1996, the year of Val Kilmer. So many great films from him. And we'll talk about The Lion Country Safari, known as The Ghost in the Darkness. In the meanwhile, please email any thoughts, questions, or comments to kilmercast@gmail.com and follow the show on Twitter @KilmerCast. For myself and my guest, Brian Riesman, thank you for listening. And remember to keep it Kilmer.
Thank you.